from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, literally right off the airplane. I mean, so literally that if it hadn't been for the fine people at the airline whose name begins with a Q, I wouldn't be here now. It was that close. Literally right off the airplane from Melbourne, Australia. And it's Melbourne. It's not Melbourne. Excuse me. Melbourne. And some interesting stuff down there, but of course some interesting stuff everywhere. First thing that attracted my attention this week, among so many others, the Department of Energy is proposing doubling the size of Yucca Mountain. Not the mountain, just the high-level nuclear waste repository. Because we're making so much already before we've even added more nuclear plants, cheap, safe, plentiful. Citing ongoing production of waste at nuclear plants around the country, the Energy Department has revealed plans to entomb, that's a cheerful way of putting it, almost 150,000 tons. Can you imagine how much stuff that is of highly radioactive waste at Yucca Mountain? This pleased Nevada's senators and state officials no end, that is to say not. They doubt Congress would revise the law that caps the current capacity of Yucca Mountain at 77,000 tons of waste and closes it, as I mentioned last week, at I think 2033, at which point we get to look for another place to dump all this crap. But it's just highly radioactive. And by the way, the Energy Department's latest estimate of the price tag, up from $57 billion, would now be, under the new plan, $77 billion. It's cheap. It's safe. It's cheap. Says Democratic Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada, quote, if they think they're going to get more money for an irresponsible plan to ship nuclear waste across the country and into Nevada's backyard, they're dreaming. He's dreaming of them shipping it, of course, to somebody else's backyard. You may have missed this. The White House this week issued a national strategy for combating terrorism, never too late. And for the first time, the White House singled out an Al-Qaeda safe haven. Any guesses? Iraq? No. Saudi Arabia? No. Iran? No. Syria? No. Pakistan. Thank you. It's the first time the country has been named as an Al-Qaeda safe haven in a White House policy document. Never too late, babe. Al-Qaeda has, quote, protected its top leadership, replenished operational lieutenants, and regenerated a safe haven in Pakistan, core capabilities, blah, blah, blah. The ambassador from Pakistan says, we do not deny that there are people in the tribal areas, but we deny that there are safe havens. I guess he thinks that they're dangerous havens. I don't know what he thinks. Most of these people, what he thinks is most of these people are on the run. They are hiding. So hiding, they can't do any damage. It's like, Al Capone was hiding. He was safe. Buried Lead Department comes up with this. There's a report in a British newspaper this weekend that the police officer who shot a Brazilian man in the wake of the bombings in London, the subway, the tube bombings, as they call them, a couple years ago, knew that the Brazilian man was not the guy they were looking for. All right, that's the story. The buried lead way at the bottom of the story is this. The police official who was testifying in the inquisition into the death of the Brazilian man, who was totally innocent, by the way, just shot trying to get on a tube train. Because that can be dangerous. The police official testifying said there had been trouble with the radio link to the undercover and firearms teams, which is why they couldn't be called off before they shot the guy. Quote, there seemed to be problems with the system, that is, the system of radio communication for high-level first responders and terrorist incidents. He said there seemed to be problems with the system, he said, but that is not uncommon. Wasn't that what we're all supposed to be solving first thing? Solving radio communication with the first. So, Australia, ladies and gentlemen, I really do like it down there. It really is America take two. But they have their problems. And chief among them is, oddly enough, they have a problem with the first inhabitants the Aborigines, they're called down there. They're basically it's everything that happened to both the most unfortunate two populations in this country, the Native Americans and the African Americans, except that the Aborigines were never formally enslaved. But next best thing, two or three generations of their children were kidnapped from them and taken away to be raised in white culture, you know, to fix them up. Or as Ann Coulter said this week about what Christians want to do to Jews, to perfect them, to perfect the Aborigines. It's called the Stolen Generations. And Australia has I mentioned this a couple years ago on this broadcast, a National Sorry Day to try to make it better. But the current and for the last decade, Prime Minister of Australia, John Howard, has always refused actually to say the S word. Almost until now. He's facing an election. He's way behind in the polls. This may be the first English-speaking member of the coalition to go down to defeat. So this weekend, he made a speech where he blamed his upbringing for his insensitivity to the plight of the Aborigines. You know, he was born at a time and in a place where it just, you know. So if he's reelected, he promises to hold a referendum to put into the Australian Constitution a preamble that pays tribute to the Aborigines as a separate, well, as not a separate tribe, as part of the Australian tribe, but, you know, salutes their separate identity. But he still won't say he's sorry. But he's been in office for 11 years. Give him 18 more months and he'll hold a referendum. The place where myself and my companion were ensconced while we were in Melbourne, this casino I mentioned last week, there were a couple of lovely little touches that I noticed while we were there. One, you know, function rooms and hotels, they often have little signs in front of the door or beside the door that tell you what's going on in the particular function room. And I was walking past one, delighted to notice that what was going on inside was, quote, VIP slots focus group, unquote. It's a casino, and they can't even figure out what the VIP slots customers want. They have to have a focus group to figure that out. Secondly, VIP slots, ladies and gentlemen. That would mean what? William Bennett? I mean, who else could be possibly described as a VIP who plays slots? It's a sucker game. William Bennett, of course, the one-time would-be culture czar of this country, lost $8 million playing the slots. In one way, I sort of suspected he was a one-man focus group down there for the VIP slots focus group, but then I realized that was impossible because there was still some food around. And secondly, there was a sign in backstage. I was at an event last night Australian time. That seems strange. And on the way to the dressing room, one passed through the kitchen where there was a sign up saying anybody who wanted to work the big event tomorrow night, that is Sunday night, to sign up, and was described on the sign as a VVVIP event. I can't wait to the focus group for their slot players. Hello, welcome to the show. Temptation had me led astray. I'm counting every day till the fool comes home. Till the fool comes home. Baby, can you stand to be alone till the fool comes home? Now, does separation make time stand still? Or time to kill till the fool comes home? Till your fool comes home. Baby, can you stand to be alone till your fool come home? I said, nah. Behave yourself when I'm gone. Now have the patience and just be as strong as if. Oh, belong till the fool comes home.
can't stand to be alone till you fool come home.
Fool done come home, baby. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the show, asking you one simple question. Am I awake? But I do have a serious question, I'm sorry to say. But I do have, oh, and by the way, just thanks to the, you know, I love people who love me. I have to. It's my business. But the drunk woman who came back and came backstage last night and hugged me after the event, set my shoulder recovery back about a day and a half. So thank you for that, madam. Apropos of clean, safe, plentiful nuclear energy, here in the today's Sunday Australian newspaper, The Age. Look, I've got it right here in my hand. I flew in with it. Smells very different from American news. That's why they should never get rid of newspapers on paper, by the way, because each paper has a distinctive smell. You ever notice that? All right, we'll move on. The Indonesian government is planning to construct 4 new nuclear power plants because, you know, it's Indonesia. They need nuclear power. No, so they won't burn coal. I guess they've been Al Gore. By the way, I was really sorry to miss all 2 days of Al Gore's asking for a recount jokes, but that's the way life is. So anyway, Indonesia is building 4 nuclear power plants, according to the Australian newspaper The Age. Where are they building them? Just in a little neighborhood right next to a volcano. But you know, volcanoes never do anything. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm. Won't you? Saluting Al Gore, we put it right up at the top today. Won't you? I think we just did.
Listen to the war. We can listen to the war.
The UN climate change report to be released next month will show that greenhouse gases in the atmosphere have already reached dangerous levels. This is according to Australia's preeminent conservationist, scientist, and Australian of the Year. God, I wish I knew who else was nominated. Tim Flannery said the report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, a co-Nobel winner with Al Gore, showed the previous research had underestimated the danger and that the tipping point on climate change had already passed 2 years ago. We thought we'd be at that threshold within about a decade, Professor Flannery says. We thought we had that much time, but the new data indicates that in about mid-2005, we crossed that threshold. He says growing economies meant growing greenhouse gas emissions, and that meant a growing threat of global warming. We have growing economies everywhere. We're still basing that economic activity on fossil fuels, he says. He's Australian of the Year, ladies and gentlemen. Not Paul Hogan. Man-made global warming is driving up humidity levels, with a risk that rainfall patterns will shift or strengthen, tropical storms intensify, and human health may suffer from heat stress, says a study released this week. From 1976 to 2004, when the world's average surface temperatures rose half a degree Celsius, global levels of atmospheric water vapor rose 2.2%, according to the paper by British scientists. By 2100, humidity levels could increase by another 10%. Previously, scientists had noted an increase in humidity over the past few decades as higher temperatures sucked more water from the land and ocean surface. But it was unclear whether these changes were the result of a natural or human impact. The new paper is based on a new set of observations of humidity levels. The data was then crunched through a powerful computer model of Earth's climate system. Water vapor was a positive feedback, a vicious circle in scientific parlance in the global warming equation. Steam is a greenhouse gas. The ramifications could be wide-ranging. The distribution and intensity of rainfall could be affected. Tropical cyclones could be beefed up. That means hurricanes, as humidity is one of the fuels for those storms. The study was published this week in the British journal Nature. And climate change is likely to increase the number of wildfires fueled by invasive weeds that are spreading through the Great Basin. This, according to researchers talking to a U.S. Senate subcommittee this past Wednesday. Aside from the wildfires and the humidity and the thing, No big deal. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast to be followed immediately by another copyrighted feature. As it's time for me to read the trades for you. From the good people at Project Apollo. We'll tell you all about them. Price sensitivity can be affected by media exposure. What? Sit still. I'll read it for you. Dateline New York. Project Apollo data indicates that marketers can identify consumer groups whose sensitivity to price depends on their exposure to advertising. This is the latest in a series of marketing case studies developed from Project Apollo, the pilot for a new marketing research service developed by Arbitron and Nielsen. Sounds like a monopoly, but it's not. Yeah, maybe. They're competitors, you know. Putatively. Quote, understanding how advertising contributes to sales and can reduce the need for price promotion is a new actionable insight for marketers provided by Project Apollo. The case study just completed provides a compelling demonstration that Project Apollo provides insights not previously available, says Dave Thomas, neither the hamburger salesman nor the comedian. Actually, he's president of Media Client Services at Nielsen Company. In the study, brand X users were separately analyzed as heavy, medium, and light purchasers of the category in which brand X falls. These users were further analyzed by the level of their exposure to TV advertising, resulting in three groups: no exposure, low exposures, and high exposures. The case study revealed that TV exposure has a substantial impact on price sensitivity of households that frequently shop the category of brand X. The analysis found that exposure to advertising appears to decrease a consumer's tendency to react to price changes. Pricing sensitivity is reduced even at low TV exposure levels compared to no exposures. Audiences with four or more exposures showed even less sensitivity to price, with behavior changes tapering off at between 7 and 8 exposures among viewers of Brand X advertising. Results of this study also indicate that advertising and price elasticity are inversely related. Price elasticity, for those of you who flunked Econ 101, means the degree to which consumer willingness to buy something is affected by the raising or lowering of the price. See, I passed it. Didn't like it, but I passed it. Purchasers of Brand X who had not been exposed to TV advertising were the most sensitive to price. Those with low exposure to TV ads were less sensitive to pricing. Audiences with high exposures showed the least sensitivity to price change. You know what the conclusion is. You don't need the people at Project Apollo to tell you. Stuff that's heavily advertised is less likely to be discounted. That's at least what's suggested when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. This is Le Show from the Edge of America. And ladies and gentlemen, news of the new Iraq, for your listening pleasure. The huge displacement of people inside Iraq, we've discussed this earlier. It doesn't make a lot of news here, strangely enough. It appears to be contributing to the further fragmentation of the country. This is from the BBC. The scale of the overall displacement is unprecedented in the history of the Middle East. That's all. We've just engendered the greatest overall displacement of people in the history of the Middle East. Should we go for the entire planet? There's a record to be broken there. There are now an estimated 4 million Iraqis who have been forced to flee their homes, and the numbers continue to rise, according to the UN Refugee Agency. Neighboring Jordan and Syria, which have borne the brunt of the problem after receiving some 2 million refugees over the past few years, now restrict access because they can no longer cope. The plight of those who fled their homes but have not been able to leave the country is dire, says the UN Refugee Agency. Dire means good, right? The head of the Iraq Support Unit told the BBC an increasing number of provinces were turning the refugees away because they lacked resources to look after them. With so many people in desperate need of shelter and food, Iraq is like a pressure cooker. They make good food, don't they? Yes, they do. Harper said the UN agency had raised the issue with the central government in Baghdad. That's cute. But was told the local authorities have been urged to shelter the fleeing Iraqis. Local governments are, in effect, ignoring directives, therefore, from Baghdad. Local authorities, says an official of the U.S. Council on Foreign Relations, local authorities are taking ever greater unilateral prerogatives in areas they control because the central state is ineffective. It lacks capacity. That's one. There's more. How about that embassy we're building there? The State Department vows this week to hold contractors accountable. Well, that's an interesting change in attitude. How about the ones built the levees and flood walls in New Orleans? Oh, we'll get to them later. The State Department vows to hold contractors accountable for delays and construction problems with that massive new embassy in Iraq, saying, according to the State Department, it will not pay for, quote, a turkey. This is said the same week we're having diplomatic problems with the turkey, i.e. Turkey. The U.S. government is ordering major repairs to correct deficiencies at the Vatican-size embassy in Baghdad. Now, either the Vatican's really small or the embassy's really big, or neither. The department sought to fend off mounting congressional criticism of the project. The embassy will be the world's largest diplomatic mission, had been scheduled to be completed in September. Last week, officials say it's badly behind schedule and might not open for business until well into 2008. Well, why would we need such a big embassy then? It will also cost nearly $150 million more than its original $650 million price, than its original $600 million price tag, making the total just $750 million. The delays, charges of shoddy workmanship, and fraud by the main contractor have caused growing concern in Congress. The State Department spokesman says he's unable to provide a revised date for completion. We don't have an answer, he told reporters, saying that Condoleezza Rice was pursuing the matter. I can't tell you when it will open up, says the State Department spokesman. The prime contractor is First Kuwaiti General Trading and Contracting Company. But Sean McCormick, the State Department spokesman, says, we're not going to buy ourselves a turkey here. No comment from Turkey. But I can't imagine they're pleased. And, of course, a former commandant of U.S. troops in Iraq, Ricardo Sanchez, said it was a nightmare without end in a speech to military journalists this week. And I don't know if anybody asked him this. I didn't see any report about it. He left the command 2-3 years ago. He's the guy who was in command when Abu Ghraib happened. General Sanchez, what took you so long? He did say, he was asked, you know, why didn't you say something while you were in command? And, you know, didn't want to screw around with the morale of his troops. But he left 3-4 years ago, and he waits till now to say it's a nightmare without end and the planning it was screwed up and blah, blah, blah. Some internet speculators say he's ticked off because he didn't get his fourth star. Speaking of nightmares, Bernard Kerik's legal nightmare is about to get worse. Federal prosecutors are expected to file charges against the former New York police commissioner that will likely include allegations of bribery, tax fraud, and obstruction of justice, according to the New York Daily News. The indictment could be an embarrassing obstacle for Kerik's former mentor and business partner, Rudy Giuliani. Kerik was Giuliani's pick, recommendation, to be President Bush's pick for America's first Secretary of Homeland Security.
When New York needed correcting, Kerik was there. With a countenance just as grim as a cleric's stare. When his house, it needed fixing, there was no money, he was Nixon. When the mobsters would mix in, Kerik was there.
Kerik was there.
When the city was on fire, Kerik was there. Taking time out only for a torrid affair, just to make a good impression. He used a flat meant for decompression of the guys in his profession. Kerik was there.
Kerik was there.
Kerik was there.
Kerik was there.
Kerik was there. When Mayor Rudy had his passion, Kerik was there. When the time had come to cash in, when Iraq needed policing, Kerik was there. Though some said it was a fleecing, could Kerik care? It was 3 long months of training, then the crap, it started raining. So without complaining, Kerik was out of there. When Homeland needed securing, Kerik was there. But his nanny records were found in disrepair. So Bernie took a powder before the questioning got louder. On the pages of the tabloids, Kerik was there, was there. When Bush did his re-swearing, Kerik was there. Tickets to the balls, he had more than his share. About him just smell big. Is he rogue or is he zealot? Everywhere except in Rudy's hair, Kerik is there.
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 This is Le Show. We have a kind of a special consumer feature right now. 10 wonderful Halloween costumes you can make for your kids for under $4. We don't normally do. And we have a call on our newsmaker line right now. All right, let's have the Halloween costume lady stand by because we want to take this call because it's on the newsmaker line. Hello, you're on the air.
Harry Shearer.
Yes, guilty as charged.
Do you recognize this voice?
Let's see.
Yvonne De La Femina, Harry, how are you?
I was going to guess the guy from my insurance agency who is not allowing my claim for the kitchen flooding, but Yvonne!
Oh. Do you have good insurance, by the way?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, good, good.
I don't have a good insurance person, but I have good insurance. That was the whole... Yvonne De La Femina, you have been a not frequent but occasional caller to this broadcast, and you If I'm not mistaken, the first time we heard from you, you were the last female hostage left in Iraq.
That's right, Harry. I was over there doing an evening of Shirley Bassey music.
Ah, that's
the Hilton over there.
Yeah.
And you were so, I tell you, the interview you did with me really was instrumental in my getting out of there.
I think it was probably vocal more than instrumental, don't you think? Yvonne, in the intervening years, you've called us on occasion. First of all, you had a sex change. You've gone through a couple more. What
the headlines really are, Harry? I was born a man. I had a sex change to become a woman. Wasn't completely satisfied as a woman. Had another successful operation. Became a fella again, and then personal, brouhahas, whatever. I became a woman again.
All right, so
that's where it is right now.
I was just going to say, please don't take this the wrong way, but what are you right now?
I'm a lady. Very, very happy, strong lady.
Are you a big boned lady?
Well, I'm a big, handsome woman.
Okay.
I've been described, it's a wonderful time to be a woman, Harry. I really think we may have our first lady president, and it's a very exciting time to be a woman. Not always for me personally, but...
And are you still performing, Yvonne? And you were a musical...
Well, no, I'm not really performing, Harry. You know, I was a performer, and I was an actress, or an actor now, you can say. Even if you are a lady, you can say actor.
Yeah.
And
that's what a wonderful time it is that we live in.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if you know this, Harry, but I was a little sidecar issue. I was the first person, the first artist at the Jack King Summer Theater to play both Professor Harold Hill and Marion the Librarian in The Music Man during the same run.
Wow.
And the only reason my string of performances ended a little abruptly was the stitches started to pull during the Wells Fargo number, and I had a bow out of the show. So, yes, long story short, and maybe it'll pertain to our later conversation about why I'm calling, but I was a performer, and I haven't done it for quite some time now. I sort of took a little bit of a hiatus and had kind of a bad relationship that I think made me stronger. I won't say nervous breakdown. A Russian fellow that I was very, but we were really the wind beneath my wings for quite a while, and that didn't work out.
What, your wings didn't need wind?
Well, just didn't turn out to be the one, you know?
Yeah.
And I suffered went through a little sad patch, but then, and even thought I'd go back to being a man again for a while. That's how dark it got.
Wow.
And if my rainy day money hadn't been spent setting up my home office for my new career, I might have just gone ahead and done it. And I'm glad that I didn't. I think I spent the money very wisely and for the new business, that I'm in now. And I don't want to make this a plug.
No, I don't normally do that. We're
not at all.
Public radio here. But I have to ask you, Yvonne, because it's been a while since we talked, when you go to a doctor and say, I was a man, I'm now a woman, I want to become a man again. Does the doctor say that's going to be rough?
Let's... Physically, the operation itself...
Yeah, I mean, does he try to discourage...
Talk me out of it.
Yeah, they try to talk you out of it, or does he just roll up his sleeves and say, let's go?
Well, I think when they see the determination in my eyes and how absolutely positive I am each time that this is the right thing for me, you can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Can't argue with that kind of belief and absolute confidence that you're just a man trapped in a woman's body, then a woman trapped in a man's body, and then a man trapped in a woman's body again. And if the doctor is compassionate, if he's read his oath, he's going to do the next series of operations. And fortunately, I've found wonderful, wonderful, compassionate medical help, mostly not in this country.
I was going to say, onshore or offshore, but yeah.
On land, but yeah. but not in the continental United States.
Not in the 48.
Not yet.
Yeah.
But there's time. I think we're going to get there.
Yeah. All right. So you mentioned your new new direction in life. We might as well delve into that a little bit before we find out why you're calling. What is it that you're doing now, Yvonne?
I'm a life coach, Harry.
A life coach.
I'm telling you something. I've never felt so jazzed every day.
Are you using air quotes around that or not?
I am.
I sense
actually,
those. Yeah.
I'm just thrilled about it, and I think I'm doing some good in this darn world, and I'm pretty excited. And you know, one of the great things about being a life coach, apart from the helping of the people, is that you can pretty much do it over the phone, which is great. I mean, I recently did two sessions while I was having an estrogen colonic, actually.
Wow.
My astrologist gives those.
Yvonne, let me ask you a question that I think is in the minds of most
sure.
listeners. How did you prepare yourself? How does one prepare to be a life coach?
The largest part of preparation, Harry, is just believing you have something to offer. Because really, you really don't need a license or anything.
No, I know.
And there's just some questions on the internet that I won't even say certificate. And the rest of it is sheer belief that your life experiences and the way you've led your life. You got to feel really good about how you led your life, really, Harry. And you've got to be able to communicate that to people who are really, really looking to you. It's not being a therapist, really, Harry. It's really practical help in making you a better you. And I don't mean you a better you. You're already a great you.
Thank you. I work a little bit on me every day.
Work does not show. It's seamless.
Thank you. When people come to you, Yvonne, and this is a delicate question again, but do you tell them about your history as a man/woman? And pardon my language, but a man.
No. Don't apologize.
Okay.
I hear this all the time. No, it's really not so much about me. You know, it's all about them. I try to keep the focus on them, you know.
So do you tell them anything about yourself?
No, I really don't want to overstep. I mean, I think that might be over the line a little bit. I tell them things about me in terms of follow my dream. You know, I did these things, and I don't think the specific. I don't really know how necessarily that would relate so much, you know. Maybe I should.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. I mean, when you give some advice and maybe a client, you call them clients?
Clients, right.
Yeah. Says, well, how do you know? And would you tell an anecdote from your own experience?
Well, sometimes I'll just be cute and just say, you're calling me, aren't you?
No. Yeah, that always works.
And maybe a little bit, I'll try to turn it on them a little bit and say, well, these are the kind of questions you've been asking people in your life that have gotten you in trouble.
Ah.
You know what I mean? I don't think it's so important that they know my psychosexual history.
But what about your theater history?
Well, that I do talk about. Because I think I've learned so much from playing in the theater or in a concert venue about how to project on stage the person you want to be and do. You know?
Yeah.
Because it's all about doing.
Yeah. And being.
And being.
Yeah. See, maybe I should be a life coach if I could.
You are, in a way.
Well,
I listen to you every week.
Thank you. Now, so do you never take clients face-to-face? Pardon me again?
No, I don't. I never do. And you know what? That is a very good thing because I think people are more relaxed and more open if you don't, you know, see them.
Yeah. Now, you don't... Again, pardon me, Yvonne, but I think that you've been so open with us over the years that I feel free to ask you these questions, but your preference for doing this over the phone has nothing to do with any, shall we say, anomalies in your personal appearance at this point?
No. Oh, my gosh, no, Harry. No, I think I'm looking great, better than ever, and it's more really about where I'm living is really not set up for that. And also... You really, I think that life, it's there are people are all over the country. Really, none of them are in my area.
Ah.
All on the phone.
Oh, okay. Are you blonde or brunette now, or redhead? What's your look?
Strawberry blonde.
Strawberry blonde. That's so
good. Very short, very kind of, did you see Million Dollar Baby, the boxer in that?
No.
Yeah. I want to say Renelle Zegwiger.
Well, say it.
But I always want to say it right.
Yeah.
I can't really say it right.
Yeah. No? Well, one of these days. So, Yvonne, you're calling for a specific reason, I guess.
Apart from just touching base with you again and just hearing, it's so great.
Thank you.
Well, I'm just calling about, I know you probably are up on this area. You really are so in, know what's going on in the world. But all my children are having a transsexual character.
Really?
They're introducing a transsexual character. Zarf, Z-A-R-F.
This is the television soap opera All My Children.
All My Children,
uh-huh.
MC.
Uh-huh.
That's how they refer to
it. I see.
You're a fan.
Uh-huh.
And they're having a transsexual character, introducing it for sweeps, which is interesting.
Huh.
And I just got to say, Harry, that I think it's kind of based on me. And you know what, Harry, I can't even get a reading.
So you're saying, now, is this is a man who becomes a woman on the show?
Yes, man who becomes a woman.
Yeah.
As far as I know, they're keeping it really under, you know.
Under wraps?
Under wraps.
Yeah.
I know that feeling, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm not just making this up. I have a couple of facts that can back me up. I was getting a pedicure not long ago, and my feet are in tubs of warm water next to a lovely woman. When you start to talk as you're sitting there waiting for your horns to soften or whatever. And I was sitting next, struck up a conversation with a young lady, wonderful young woman, Renee Markowitz Santiago.
Okay.
One seemingly lovely Jewish woman, married a Cuban fella, by the way. You know, we're talking, exchanging stories, we're sitting there.
Yeah.
And I ended up telling about my life story. I even showed her, Renee, pictures from my last sex change that I have on my cell phone.
Really?
Yes. And when she regained consciousness, Harry, she hadn't eaten lunch.
Mm.
I guess it was a little startling to see the pictures. She said to me, and again, remember the name, Renee Markowitz Santiago. She said to me that my story was the most mesmerizing story she ever heard. Long story short, I'm watching AMC, All My Children, and I see that Renee Markowitz Santiago is a writer on that show.
Oh, my God.
And I hear that they're doing this Zarf character. And it's also no coincidence that the name is Zarf. And I can explain that to you.
Yeah, please do, because that's not a normal-sounding name.
Well, it's not a normal. Thank you.
For either man or woman.
Thank you.
All right.
And, Harry, what are those things? And I don't really have the big, fancy East Coast education. But is it an anagram when the letters of a name mean other things?
You mean stand for something else?
Yes, Z-A-R-F.
No, that's not an anagram.
Okay. Well, that's neither here nor there, really.
Okay.
Because if you go Zarf, and I told her all of this.
Yeah.
The name of the fellow who performed my last procedure is named Zoltan Asimov.
Yeah.
Z-A, right?
Yeah. So,
and the R-F is registered pharmacist. He had been a surgeon in Sierra Leone.
Uh-huh.
Only become a pharmacist here.
Yeah.
Z-A-R-F.
But, Yvonne?
Yes.
Pharmacist is with a P.
Yes, I know that.
Oh, okay. But,
you know, if they had done it exactly, the anagram, which is not an anagram,
right,
then that would have left them probably no wiggle room legally at all.
I see what you're saying. So they did that
so,
amount of...
Okay, but I get the inside joke.
Okay.
I get it.
The name of the doctor again?
Zoltan Asimov.
Zoltan Asimov.
Zoltan Asimov.
And he was...
He's not really... He would be a doctor in his own native...
I understand.
Leone.
It's an odd name for Sierra Leone, but I'm following
you. I know
you.
That he was born there.
Okay, all right.
More about the medical stuff.
I see.
Pretty closed mouth guy.
Yeah.
Always seemed in a hurry.
Huh. Always?
Well, not when it counted.
Okay, good. So, Yvonne, you're not calling because you're going to sue or something, are you?
No, I'm not going to sue Harry any more than those young Afro-American, or is it African-American or black fellows that were so profoundly upset by Michael Richards that they may need a financial settlement.
Yeah.
I don't know. If not a reading, I certainly would like an explanation. And if that translated into it was explained financially to me, whatever.
Yeah. But when you say a reading, then so your first goal would be to be playing the character on the show? Is that what
I would love it. I mean, God knows I have the chops.
Excuse me?
I certainly have. Well, I've had many chops, but no. But I mean, you know what I mean. I certainly.
You mean the acting?
I am a performer. And I love the life coach thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I also love to craft a character.
Yeah. Well, who doesn't?
And the singing, of course, could be fun.
Is there singing on All My Children?
No, but there could be if I played that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Have you called the office and asked for an appointment or something like that?
Oh, yes, and I tried, and somehow Renee seems to be always out when I call.
Hmm.
It's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we were there together, oh, God, half an hour, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
and you're there so long, and your feet are out, and you talk, you know?
Yeah, there's a bond.
You never dreamed you're going to be your life, because I may want to use that, my own character, in some written piece of some kind.
Some theater piece?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. But if you called, like, the casting office, have you, or just tried to call Renee?
Tried to call Renee, call the casting office, the executive producers, ABC, you know.
Disney?
Busy, what's it pertaining to? Very, very friendly, but distant.
Yeah.
Everybody's, I don't know, I'm sure you run into this all the time.
Hmm.
People are, you know, they get what they want and they move on.
Yeah.
Caravan moves on.
Caravan moves on. Yvonne, did any of them say, but the character is a man becoming a woman and you're right now a woman?
No, and that's a very good point. And I'm not saying it would be an easy rewrite, but boy, they do so many shows. It shouldn't be that, you know. And I'm not also saying that I wouldn't be willing to, you know.
Oh my God, really?
Well, no, but I'm certainly willing to talk.
Yeah.
And they're not.
Yeah, I see.
So
you're open. Pardon the expression again.
I am, and I think it might be more interesting starting as a woman anyway, but that, you know, I'm not going to tell them how to produce their show. I just think it might be certainly an open exchange of ideas.
So are you calling basically to ask me to, or just to use these microphones of the...
Well, it's to use your microphones to just say hello. You can't take a person's life and make daytime drama out of it without so much as a howdy do, hello, let's talk. Let's pay whatever.
Yeah. As you understand it, is this a character who has more than one sex change, or is that nobody knows because it's they're keeping the story?
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, I've told it how I've gone back and forth a couple of times.
Right.
And each time thought it was the right way to go, and was for months.
Yeah.
Once.
Yeah.
But I don't know where they're heading. Maybe they're going to be doing that as well.
Hmm.
It'd be nice to know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if not, at least I feel like I've gotten my voice out there just a bit.
Yeah. But possibly what you'd like is your pound of flesh. Pardon the expression again. I'm sorry. But...
Well, I just like a good hearing.
Mm.
That's all.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people in the industry listen to this broadcast. Weirder things have happened than that you get a call from the people at All My Children.
Well, you know, this similar story happened to... a young Afro-American fellow who thinks that John Guare took his life in 6 degrees of separation, was it?
Yeah.
I don't know where that went, so I'm not sure what my point is. But look it up.
Okay. All right. Good. We have the internet at our disposal now, so we can do that. Yvonne, great to hear from you. Good luck with the life coaching. Do you have
Thank you, Harry, very, very much. And it's wonderful to speak to you again.
And great to speak to you. And
good luck with all your projects.
Thank you, and I hope that somebody from All My Children calls you.
Well, if they do, I'll certainly owe it to you.
And I hope this can be resolved in a friendlier way, and that nobody needs to call Gloria Allred.
That's right. You don't have her number, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Yvonne Della Femina, always a pleasure, and have a happy holiday.
Happy holiday to you, Harry.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Smiles as if to say, well,
papers in a tidy pile, evidence for her reasons. And in the night he takes the minute counts and pulls the files, detailing every treason. I am the last one you'd ever suspect of setting the fire, of setting the fire. But as you switch on your TV tomorrow morning, you'll hear me saying quietly, whatever you want, whatever you want, whatever you want is fine by me.
Ladies and gentlemen, a federal agency says there's a substantial likelihood that the Army Corps of Engineers acted improperly in handling a politically connected Florida company's $27 million contract to build flood pumps in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. And the main pumps protecting New Orleans in the event of a major hurricane or flood are, quote, inherently flawed due to poor design and still not have been properly tested, according to whistleblower documents released by public employees for environmental responsibility. The Office of Special Counsel has asked Defense Secretary Robert Gates to respond to the allegations by Maria Garzino, an engineer who was dozens of Corps personnel brought to New Orleans after Katrina and who blew the whistle. Garzino was in charge of a team installing pumps manufactured by Moving Water Industries of Florida, a politically connected firm. It's owned by David Eller, once a business partner of former Florida Governor Jeb Bush. Nice people doing nice things. Whatever it takes. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on both Sirius and XM satellite radios, around the world via the internet at two different locations, whenever you want it, live and archived. HarryShearer.com and KCRW.com, available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow, and available as a free podcast at KCRW.com. And it'd be just like fixing the damn pumps if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Already, thank you very much. And between now and then, please join me in the video medium at www.mydamnchannel.com. HarryShearer.com is a place to go if you want to email me or find out what the music is on this broadcast. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks and to Pam Halstead. Yet. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.